Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast for October 2008, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a champion for student voices. We recognize the essential role that free speech and a free press play in a democratic society. The SPLC is committed to nurturing and protecting those freedoms for the next generation. For more information about the center's work, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. California has just enacted the toughest and most far-reaching law in the country that prevents schools and colleges from retaliating against their employees for defending their students' First Amendment rights or for refusing to participate in illegal censorship. It's a terrific law. It'll save a lot of teachers a lot of anxiety and heartache. And it will give comfort to a lot of students who are living in fear that every cartoon or every editorial might put their favorite teacher's head on the chopping block. But there's a bonus that makes California new advisor protection law even sweeter. Late in the legislature's deliberations, the bill by Senator Leland Yee was amended in committee so that it also provides some very much needed additional protection for student journalists themselves. The law says that students who suffer unlawful censorship of their speech don't lose their right to bring a legal claim if they graduate before or during the time a court case is pending. This is a technical change in the law that went pretty much unnoticed because attention was rightly focused on the protection of advisors. The stories they told were compelling. Teacher after teacher came forward, sometimes at great risk, to testify before the legislature about losing a job or being transferred or threatened because the principal or the superintendent thought the student newspaper was too controversial or too negative or was writing about subjects too adult for a teen audience. There's no minimizing the importance of the new anti-retaliation law for educators and for their students, but let's not lose sight of the other very important change that Senator Yee successfully pushed through. In June 2007, a federal appeals court in the case of Lane v. Simon decided that college students who graduated from college while their First Amendment censorship suit was pending lost their legal right to continue pursuing the case, even though the case had gone all the way through the trial court and up to the Court of Appeals while the plaintiffs were still in school. The reasoning of the 10th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals was that once students graduate, they can't get any meaningful relief from the courts. Even if they win the case and the court orders the newspaper to stop censoring students in the future, so what? That ruling conveys no particular benefit on former students, or at least that's what the judges on the 10th Circuit decided. The Lane v. Simon case cast a long shadow over the ability of student plaintiffs to ever successfully pursue a censorship case in federal court, since administrators could simply use delaying tactics to try to run out the clock until the last plaintiff left school. California, which so often leads the nation in staking out common sense protections for student journalists and for their advisors, has done it yet again. California's legislators and governors recognize that the Lane v. Simon rule is just bad public policy, and your ability to defend the First Amendment shouldn't depend on how many credit hours you are from graduating. Let's hope other states, as they have so often in the past, get the message and follow California's lead. You might remember, a couple of years ago, we went through a silly season of stories about schools getting carried away with zero tolerance. There was zero tolerance for weapons, with students getting suspended just because they brought a plastic cake cutter to school. There was zero tolerance for drugs, where students were being punished for sharing an Advil with a classmate. We're in a season now of zero tolerance for speech about violence, and regrettably, the federal courts are offering very little protection for students victimized when their schools overreact in extreme ways. The Supreme Court helped set the tone last year in deciding the Morse v. Frederick case, which everybody remembers as the Bong Hits for Jesus case. In the Morse case, five members of the Supreme Court decided that it was perfectly okay for a principal to discipline a student who held up the nonsense banner, Bong Hits for Jesus, on a public sidewalk on a day off from school, because the school principal interpreted Bong Hits for Jesus as a message urging the students at her school to run out and start taking drugs. The court glossed over the fact that there were any number of more logical interpretations of the sign, including the one the student himself testified that he intended, which was no meaning at all, just a collection of nonsense words meant to catch the attention of the TV cameras. In effect, the court skipped over any real analysis of whether the school's interpretation was reasonable and decided, if it was good enough for the principal, it's good enough for us. Well, Morse wasn't the first court case to give extra strength deference to a school administrator's disciplinary decision, but it certainly contributed to the climate we're in today, in which many courts refuse to second-guess even the most strained, irrational decisions by school administrators. And here's a case in point. A ruling recently issued by the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York in a case called Cuff versus Central Valley School District. In the Cuff case, a 10-year-old boy in the fifth grade at New York's Berea Elementary School got a 5-day suspension because of what his principal decided was a genuine threat to blow up the school. The student, in fact, wrote the phrase, quote, "blow up the school with all the teachers in it," end quote, as a very bad joke that he tacked onto the end of a class assignment in which students were asked to talk about their favorite sports and their favorite activities. No disagreement, this was not at all funny, and the student probably deserved a strong lecture about why it's not funny, especially in today's times, to make jokes about blowing people up. Let's not forget to put it in a little perspective that Mr. Cuff was 2 years old when the terrorists attacked on September 11th and undoubtedly doesn't have the same level of perspective about bombings as a person who actually lived through that disaster, which is something that a school counselor could have educated him about. But the school did not take young Mr. Cuff's unsuccessful joke as an opportunity to counsel him or educate him. It treated the matter as an honest-to-goodness threat. Never mind the fact that the boy had no history of violence, and nobody apparently stopped to ask how a 10-year-old might be able to blow up anything bigger than a water balloon. The boy's family appealed the suspension in federal court as a violation of their son's First Amendment rights. A U.S. district judge decided the family had no case. The boy's comments were unprotected by the First Amendment, the court decided, because even if the school knew to a certainty that the boy had no ability to actually blow up the school, a school can punish comments that it believes, quoting the judge here, are, quote, a general indication of violent intention or propensity, end quote. Legally, and from the standpoint of student journalists, there are two worrisome points about the Cuff case. First, and worst, is that Cuff represents the latest in a continuing effort to chip away at the strong First Amendment protections that the Supreme Court recognized 40 years ago in the Tinker case. In the Tinker case, the Supreme Court famously said that student speech cannot be prevented or punished unless it rises to the level of a substantial disruption of the school. Now, 40 years later, a federal judge is saying that if your principal thinks you've said something that just identifies you as generally a violence-prone person, that's enough for your speech to lose its First Amendment protection, even if there was no reasonable possibility you would act on it. What this decision will do if it isn't overturned on appeal is just continue lowering the bar for censorship and letting administrators overreact with no meaningful oversight. Second, the judge in the Cuff case relied heavily on a selective reading of the Supreme Court's opinion in the Morse-Bonghits decision. Now remember, that's the decision that said that speech urging young people to take illegal drugs is not protected by the First Amendment. Justice Alito, who wrote an influential concurring opinion in Morse, specifically said the decision was limited to drugs and could go no further. But the New York court selectively quoted from Justice Alito's opinion to make it look like he was giving the courts a much broader license to declare any speech about any type of illegal conduct to be unprotected. Well, this is exactly what people feared would start to happen after the murky and confusing opinion the Supreme Court handed down in Morse, and until the court reaffirms that Morse means nothing more than what it says, we can expect further attempts to widen the Morse First Amendment loophole into the Morse First Amendment freeway tunnel. The Cuff case is on appeal before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York, and there's a chance that the appeals court will send a message to schools that you can't go damaging kids' lives by labeling them school bombers for what you know is a joke. Well, putting the law aside for a second, let's just talk about educational practices. Is it really the soundest and the safest educational practice for a school that's faced with what may or may not be a real threat of violence to kick into immediate panic mode and start handing out punishments? Isn't it better for everyone, including the safety of the larger community, for the school counselor to calmly have a conversation to assess the genuineness of the threat before ramping the Homeland Security level up to DEFCON 5? You'll hear school lawyers say that in this lawsuit-happy world, principals are safest in hustling the potentially dangerous kid out of the school before he explodes. But of course, kicking the student out of school doesn't prevent the explosion, it just relocates it. And arguably, it makes it even more likely. A student who was angry to begin with is unlikely to get much cheerier when he's suddenly thrown out into the street. A principal who reacts to a truly dangerous child by immediately expelling the child from school is doing the educational equivalent of pulling the pin out of a hand grenade, throwing it the other way, and running. It used to be, not very long ago, that we could count on the federal courts to bring some sanity to school discipline and to slap some sense into administrators who couldn't see the difference between a kilo of uncut heroin and a Tylenol. But we can't rely on the courts to be the voice of reason anymore. Many of them have abandoned that job and just blindly defer to whatever the school administration decided was right. And of course, that just reinforces the message to schools that there's no such thing as overreacting. If young people can't depend on the courts to protect them from irrational and humorless school administrators, then they've got to start taking common sense steps to protect themselves. Of course, journalists should never, ever shy away from covering legitimate news about violence or voicing opinions about guns or terrorism or any topic that touches on violence. But students at the high school level in particular need to think very, very hard before they make any kind of joke or write any kind of a parody or satire about shootings or explosions or any other violence, especially involving the school or school personnel or classmates. Those of us who spend a lot of time in airports and on airplanes have already learned since 9/11 that there is zero room for sarcasm when you are going through security. You do not, under any circumstances, tell a joke in that setting about hijacking or bombs or terrorism, or you will quickly find yourself in a very small room under very bright lights. In today's world, it may be that high school students have to tread just as carefully, follow the airport security rule, and when it comes to violence, treat school as a humor-free zone. Well, that's the Student Press Law Center podcast for October 2008. Check out our website at www.splc.org, where you can find a link to the Cuff decision and other news about student press law affecting your rights. And if you're a student journalist or advisor with a question about your rights, call our hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.